Can you move in the back? Because it's where the women sit. Sit right in the back on the wall. Thanks. Hare Krishna. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 5, Lord Rishabhdev's Teachings, Text Number 8. Pungsa Striya Mituni Bhavam Etam Tayo. Sorry. Mito Vidya Grantamahu Ato Griha Chaitra Sutapta Vittar Janasya Moho Ayam Aham Mameti Pungsastriya Mituni Bhavametam Tayo Mito Vidya Grantamahu Ato Griha Chaita Sutapta Vittar Janasya Moho Yamaham Mameti Pungsastriya Mituni Bhavametam Tayo Mito Vidya Grantamahu Ato Griha Chaita Sutapta Vittar Janasya Moho Yamaham Mameti Pungsastriya Mituni Bhavametam Tayo Mito Ridya Grantamahu Griha Chaita Sutapta Vittar Janasya Moho Yamaham Mameti Pungsastriya Mituni Bhavametam Tayo Mito Vidya Grantamahu Ato Griha Chaita Sutapta Vittar Samoha Yamaham Mameti Pungsastriya Mituni Bhavametam Tayo Mito Vidya Grantamahu Sutapta Vittar Samohon. Ladies. Striyam Hituni Bhavametam Tayo Mito Ridya Grantamahu Griha Chaita Sutapta Vittar Ladies want to chant? Pungsastriya Mituni Bhavametam Tayo Mito Vidya Grantamahu Ato Griha Chaita Sutapta Vittar Janasya Moho Yamaham Mameti Pungsastriya Mituni Bhavametam Tayo Mito Vidya Grantamahu Ato Griha Chaita Sutapta Vittar Janasya Moho Yamaham Mameti Pungsastriya Mituni Bhavametam Tayo Mito Vidya Grantamahu Ato Griha Chaita Sutapta Vittar Janasya Moho Yamaham Pungsaha Of a male Striyaha Of a female Mituni Bhavam Attraction for sexual life. Etam, this, tayoho, of both of them, mitaha, between one another. Vidya grantim, the knot of the hearts. Ahu, they call. Ataha, thereafter. Griha, by home. Chetra, field. Suta, children. Apta, relatives. Vittai, and by wealth. Janasya, of the living being. Moha, illusion. Ayam, this. Aham, I. Mama, mine. Iti, thus. Translation. The attraction between male and female is the basic principle of material existence. On the basis of this misconception, which ties together the hearts of the male and female, one becomes attracted to his body, home, property, children, relatives, and wealth. In this way, one increases life's illusions and thinks in terms of I and mine. Please repeat. The attraction between male and female is the basic principle of material existence. On the basis of this misconception, which ties together the hearts of the male and female, one becomes attracted to his body, home, property, children, relatives, and wealth. In this way, one increases life's illusions and thinks in terms of I and mine. Srila Prabhupada's purport. Sex serves as the natural attraction between man and woman. And when they are married, their relationship becomes more involved. Due to the entangling relationship between man and woman, there is a sense of illusion whereby one thinks, this man is my husband, or this woman is my wife. This is called Riddhya Granti, the hard knot in the heart. This knot is very difficult to undo, even though a man and woman separate either for the principles of varnashram or simply to get a divorce. In any case, the man always thinks of the woman, and the woman always thinks of the man. Thus, a person becomes materially attached to family, property, and children, although all of these are temporary. The possessor unfortunately identifies with his property and wealth. Sometimes, even after renunciation, one becomes attached to a temple or to the few things that constitute the property of a sannyasi. But such attachment is not as strong as family attachment. The attachment to the family is the strongest illusion. In the Satya Sanghita, it is stated, Brahmadya yagyavalkadya muchyante stri sahayinaha bodhyante kechanaite sham visheshang cha vido viduhu. Sometimes it is found among exalted personalities like Lord Brahma that the wife and children are not a cause of bondage. On the contrary, the wife actually helps further spiritual life and liberation. Nonetheless, most people are bound by the knots of the marital relationship, and consequently they forget their relationship with Krishna. Om jnana timarandasya jnananjana shalakaya chakshurun minatam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha. Excuse me. I was born in darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto him and to all members of Sri Parampara. So, many of us know that this verse is one of the most famous among those spoken by Lord Rishabhdev here. And if you look at the sweep of his instructions thus far, he's making a very strong case. Can we douse the incense if there's any burning? He's making a very strong case for the need to detach oneself from sense gratification. He's already mentioned Nunam Pramatta Kurate Vikarma Yarindriya Trite Apanoti, that those who are simply absorbed in the search for sense gratification are really mad. There's a certain madness there. And in fact, one of the words for women is pramada, is that which drives you mad. So, and in that madness, one forgets everything. You remember the previous verse, he's saying, one is really a fool if he doesn't understand that the endeavor for sense gratification is useless. And yet, even someone who is very intelligent, vipassajit, the word vipassajit was used, can get caught up in that and completely forget himself. So one can be material intelligent and even theoretically know of the dangers of gross sense gratification. And yet, by the contact or the association with the modes of nature and with those who are absorbed in the modes of nature, you remember the very important second verse, Mahatsevam Dvaramahuvamuktes Tamo Dvaram Yoshitang Sangi Sangam. So associating with those who are completely absorbed in sense gratification is a sure way to bring the curtain down on your knowledge and to also take on those qualities of obsession and absorption in sense gratification. So here, in this particular verse, he's saying this is the result of that. When one simply surrenders to the completely to the whirlwind, the illusion of happiness within sex life, this is the result. Punksastriya mituni bhava. It's a kind of a bhava. And this word bhava is important. Remember, we have yang vapi smadang bhavam, chajajante kalevanam. A bhava can mean different things, obviously. It can mean a state of ecstasy. It can also simply mean a nature or a state of consciousness, a predominant state of consciousness. So this is mituni bhavam. This is the whole atmosphere and mentality of enjoying sex. And when one gets caught up into that and then actually has sex and then gets hooked up with a woman or man in this way, then this is the result. This is the result described. Atra griha cheta sutapta vidda janasimoho yamaham mameti. So, verse the end there, aham mameti, you know, I and mine. This is the nature of the false ego. This is really the sum and substance of it. Identifying oneself as the body and the things in relationship to the body as mine. And on the basis of that false conception, that's the big mistake, right? Big mistake. Everything else is built. And he gives a little summary of what's built. First comes, as soon as that happens, then you need a griha. You need a place in which to have the relationship and build the accoutrements of the relationship, which then follows here, right? Even if, you know, the griha starts out to be the back seat of a car, you know. you need some place, and gradually, you know, if you're a civilized human being, there's a marriage, and you grow like this, and then you have chaitra. Now chaitra, of course, means field, and normally, you know, in a Vedic culture, there's a field for tilling and cow protection, and it's a source of income. You have to have a source of income. That's the idea of the chaitra. So you have to have the place and you have to have the job. If you're going to have a marriage, if you're going to have a relationship, then these are the two basics, right? And then naturally what follows is children from the engagement of this relationship. Now that's also a big burden. You have to have even a bigger house and a bigger job if you're going to have children, right? You really have to worry about the source of income and so forth. And along with all of this comes the extended family. That's why he talks about the apta. There's the in-laws, right? They're also part of the whole thing. And then this is my clan. This is my, you know, and then when you have the wedding, you know, you see the wedding, or when the grandchild is born or when the children are born, then everybody comes and you see this is all mine. You know, I'm related to these persons in many ways. So these are great ties that develop, ties of affection and ties of identity and interest. And you have to worry. Uncle Joe is sick now. Oh, I have to worry about that, you know. And he's coming to visit us, and he's staying for a while, and the whole thing develops, you know. And then to support it all, vitta, you need a lot of money. So then you're worried about the bank account and insurance and the health plan and the whole thing. And this is the hard incrustation in the heart known as aham mama, aham mameti. This is the nature of it. Now, I would like to reference wonderful set of prayers by Akura. He deals with the same subject matter in the 10th canto. Akura is our, you know, acharya for prayer, right? He's known for his prayers. So when I first read these prayers, of course, in the Krishna book you read them, Prabhupada summarizes in one paragraph. But somehow these prayers just struck me as very cogent, and they deal with the same subject here. So Akura says, Bhagavan jiva loko yam mohitas tavamaya aham mamet yasad graho brahmite karma vartmasu. He says, O Lord, so the context is, well, he's taking Krishna and Balaram to Mathura. And you remember in the middle of that trip, they stop at the Yamuna and they take a bath. Remember, Krishna and Balaram take a bath and they come back on the chariot. Akura goes out into the Yamuna. And suddenly he sees Krishna and Balaram. He's puzzled. I thought they were on the chariot. He comes back out and they're there and there's like this whole thing. Then he goes back into the Yamuna and he sees Ananta Dev and he sees Krishna there in his majestic form. And that's where these prayers are offered. So there's preliminary prayers he's offering to all different avatars. And these are the end of the prayers, those particular prayers of his. So what he says here is, O Lord, the living entities in this world are bewildered by your illusory energy. Maya. Becoming involved in the false conception of I and my, aham mameti, they are forced to wander along the path of fruitive work. This wandering, brahmande, brahmate, we're wandering in this world. Different bodies, different species, different families, different everything. It's called wandering. Now this asad graha is a very interesting word. Now graha has different meanings. You know, graha can mean like a crocodile. It grabs you. You know, it holds on. Graha. Graha can also be a planet, like you were reading from Prahlad in the morning, and it describes the Krishna Graha. That Prahlad, he's not influenced by Saturn and this, where's, you know, what's my transit today? No, one planet for him, the Krishna Graha, that's completely his influence, you see? And we want to come under that influence completely. They're all other influences finished. So, but Graha can also mean that by which you grasp the world. You know, we have this idiom in English too. I can't grasp it. It means I can't understand it, right? Or I'm able to grasp that idea. So that's also there in English. So asad graha is the false conceptions of everything that proceeds from the basic misconception of aham mamit, aham mama, I and my. So this is called asad graha. All these philosophies built up, hedonism and existentialism and thisism and thatism, by which people try to see the world and themselves, these are all asad graha. They're illusory. So now, Akura is taking a very humble position. So the next verse, he says, well, I'm analyzing it this way, but I'm also like that. So he says, aham chatmatma jagara darata swajanadishu brahmami swapna kalpeshu naja mudha satyadiya vibho. Now this word swapna comes up again and again in Bhagavatam. It's a dream. This world is actually like a dream in that it doesn't have the same substance as reality. That's why Krishna says, nasado vidyate bhavo na bhavo vidyate satak, right at the beginning of his teachings, is that for the asat, there's no real existence, you know, as there is. We understand it's not false in the sense it doesn't exist, but it's a dream is real. In this, as a dream, it can cause you great emotion. It's real at the time, but it's not what we think it is. And it doesn't have the same reality as the daylight. And this is also a dream that actual life is in the spiritual world. So therefore he calls this swapna. So he says here, I'm also like that. I am also deluded in this way, O Almighty Lord, foolishly thinking that my body, my children, my home, my wife, money and followers are real, although they are actually as unreal as a dream. So the same list is there. You start with the body, and then it expands into another, right? And then you have the children and home and the whole thing. And this, and Prahlad describes it in his teachings to his friends like a cocoon, isn't it? The little silkworm, he thinks he's very safe in there, very happy and warm, and he's, you know, doing this cocoon. But he's trapped. And ultimately, the silk maker, he comes and boils him. Right? Yeah, that's the end. That's what happens with death. But Prahlad very, very graphically describes it. How can one escape from this cocoon of affection? The idea is you have attachments. These are these knots that are described in this heart, the Riddhiya Granthi. It's like hard knots with all different things in this world. So now he's analyzing, Akura is analyzing. I'm also like that. I'm completely. And then this verse, which to me was like really struck me. Anityanatma dukkhe shuva parya matirya ham dvandvaramas tamo vishto najane tvatmanak piyam. So everything's upside down. It's all reversed. You remember at the beginning of the 15th chapter, Krishna speaks about the upside down banyan tree. So that's what we're living in, that upside down world. Everything is reversed. It's all backwards. Instead of loving Krishna, we love the body. Instead of thinking, you know, understanding. So he says, like, thus mistaking the temporary for the eternal, my body for myself, and sources of misery for sources of happiness, I have tried to take pleasure in material dualities. Covered in this way by ignorance, I could not recognize you as the real object of my love. And this is the real tragedy for the soul. Is that we completely forget our real object of attachment and love and service as Krishna. And we direct that within this world, just like this expanded, extended family. There are so many objects of love there. The wife or the husband, and there's the children, there's the money, the relatives. These take our affection. That's where the heart lies. And where is Krishna in all this? He's not there. He's hidden behind this facade, you know, this phantasmagoria of Maya. So he's lamenting that in this reversed position, taking the temporary, all of these, this big list, it's all temporary, for the eternal. We're thinking, you're actually thinking, I'll live here forever, right? This is my family, this is my wife, and so on. And, of course, the body for the self, it's not true. And then the sources of misery for sources of happiness. This is, isn't it? I mean, the sex life, when it's engaged in unrestrictedly, who can deny that it brings so much misery? The unwanted children, the emotional upheaval, the diseases, the abortions, the implication in sin, the overpopulation and disaster. It's utter disaster. And yet, as explained yesterday, a nice class by Nakat Mabu, it's everywhere. It's practically in the ether. You know, it's increased in my short lifetime of 46, you know, 60 years. 50 years I've been awake, you know. It's just increased exponentially. You can't go anywhere, you know, the billboards, the TV, the magazines, the movies, whatever you put in your ear, the hear, you know. It's all sex and joy and joy and joy and joy. And it's just madness. It is truly madness. And it causes tremendous suffering. So this is what he says is that I'm trying to enjoy the dualities of this world and entering into darkness. This effort to enjoy is what covers our knowledge. It's right there in the Gita. Avritam gyanam etena gyanino nityavaidena. This lust is our worst enemy, and it covers the real knowledge of the soul. And all suffering begins from that. So, how to get out of it? So then he compares himself to a foolish animal. You know, this is an analogy, or a foolish person. Yatabodo jalam hitva. Here is the jala again. I'm thinking about a lot of water this morning. Tomorrow is near jala. So again we have jala. Yadavado jalam hitva prati chanam tadudbhavai. Abhyeti mrigatrishnam vai tadvatvaham paramukha. So the mrigatrishna. Who knows what a mrigatrishna is? Who can say? Yes. The mirage. Why is it called the mrigatrishna? Yeah. It's coming from the deer, the foolish deer, running out into the, you know, and looking for water where there's no water. Mriga is a deer, Krishna is thirst. So that which the deer thirsts for, oftentimes is illusory. So he says, just as a fool overlooks a body of water covered by the vegetation growing in it and chases after a mirage, so I have turned away from you. Now this is a very deep verse. There's no purports here, by the way. But Prabhupada's explained in his Krishna book. So, imagine, just visualize this. You're in an oasis in a desert, Sahara Desert, serious desert, you know. And you're on the edge of that oasis. You're thirsty. Right next to you is a beautiful little pool of water, right? But that there is vegetation that has grown up in that water that is covering the pool. You cannot see it. You don't know it's there. You look out into the desert, and there's this wonderful lake out there. And you're so foolish that you say, oh, you run out into the desert and you die, or you just, you know, you suffer greatly. So now, the idea is that in this world covers our knowledge, right? In other words, all of this material energy. But it's grown up from Krishna. It's nothing but Krishna's energy, you see? So that, it's just like the cloud is produced by the sun and covers the cloud, or covers our vision of the sun. So the vegetation is produced from the water, from Krishna, and this material energy, and covers Krishna. And the foolish soul who has no other understanding, he hasn't come in contact with this knowledge, or someone who's awake and knows the truth, must run after the mirage. You must, because you have to have engagement. You're thirsty. The living entity desires. So he's comparing, I've turned away from you. And having turned away from you since time immemorial, I've forgotten you. I don't even know you're there. And so I'm running after the mirage of pleasure in this world, headed by sex. Everything produces from that. And then he laments in this next verse. This, I really identify with this one. Notsehe ham kripanadi kama karma hatang manaha rodhum pamati bishchakshai riyamanimitastataha. So even though knowing all this, he says, my intelligence is so crippled that I cannot find the strength to curb my mind, which is disturbed by material desires and activities and constantly being dragged here and there by my obstinate senses. So this is the dilemma of the soul who understands these things theoretically, but really the mind is too powerful. It's very obstinate. Strong. Remember, we hear from the Bhagavad Gita. We know that from experience. So the intelligence is what can control the mind. We have to strengthen the intelligence. Here he's saying the intelligence is so crippled. I can't control it. The mind is full of all these karmic ideas. You remember karmatmakam? We're just reading that key verse a few verses back. Colored with this fruit of desire and this mentality. We're on the rutta, you know. The chariot of the mind, and it's got momentum. And that momentum is this impelling of the modes of nature and the ideas of sense gratification that we've experienced before and that are coming in from every direction. You know, this, the invitation to enjoy. It's very powerful. So, how to do that? We have to strengthen the intelligence. Here he's saying, oh, my intelligence is too crippled. My mind is being whipped around by the senses and by all of these things. So what to do? So the solution comes, of course. Here, the last verse, he surrenders to Krishna. Here. And the spiritual master. Soham tavangi pakatosam satan dorapam tachapi hamba vadanugra ishamane pungso bavedya isang sadanaba vargas tvayab janava sadopasana yamatisyat. Being thus fallen, I am approaching your feet for shelter, O Lord, because although the impure can never attain your feet, I think it is nevertheless possible by your mercy. Only when one's material life has ceased, O Lord, can one develop consciousness of you by serving your pure devotees. Now, this is very, very profound. Here, he's taking the only possible course of action. And that is really that even in our impure condition, even in our helpless condition, we have to still pray. We have to cry out for the mercy of the Lord. And this is what the chanting of the holy name is. He says, even though, you know, the mind is going here and there and it's full of all these ideas and I'm entangled in all of these different things, the only hope is to cry with desperate supplication to Krishna. And that's what the chanting is all about, isn't it? That's the mood that Prabhupada gave us, and it's repeated again and again. And then he mentions here how, okay, understanding that and we're getting the mercy of the Lord, and it comes in so many ways, the most important of which that he sends his pure devotee to help us. And to instruct us and give us a good example. Still, we have to make the effort to end our involvement in these things. We have to accept regulation and discipline in order to actually become Krishna conscious, in order to progress on the path. All of the facility is given to us, and the knowledge. See, this kind of knowledge, this is revolutionary. You remember at the beginning of the Bhagavatam, even in the preface, Prabhupada quotes the verse, famous verse of Narada Muni, Tad Bhagavasago Janadaga Viplavo, that these words about Krishna, even if I'm perfectly composed, but sincerely spoken and parampara, are meant to bring about a revolution in the life of this impious civilization. So that means a revolution in our own lives first, right? So Viplava is very interesting. It means to capsize the boat, you know, turn it upside down. That's what Viplava means. So it means that a revolution always means a very big upheaval. So in everybody's life, anyone who takes to this science, the fortunate few in this world who are become interested in this philosophy, hear it, and make the effort to actually follow it, we have to make a revolution in our own lives. And it comes back to that idea that we're all upside down here, you know, that everything is reversed. So we recognize that, and we try to reverse it. It means that, yes, this power of sex is very, you know, prominent. We have to minimize it as much as possible, you know, or reject it entirely. That this is kind of an addiction. It's an addiction that goes on from species to species. In other words, it's in every life. You know, probably this is the basis of material life in general, right? There's always some attraction here. So it's built into the material body. This is the, you know, the basic attraction. So just like any addiction, if you become addicted to some drug or tobacco, say, you know, it's very difficult to stop it. Right? It's just a given. Oh, okay, now I have to do something to stop it. So you try to minimize it. You try to get with people, maybe, you know, if there's a serious thing, who can give you strength to have the will to get rid of it, you know. So we have to see it that way, that sex desire really is not inherent in the soul. It's the body. It's the covering. It's a reflection, a truly perverted reflection of prema, of true love for Krishna. Prabhupada explains it very nicely in the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita. So kama is nothing but prema that has been adulterated by contact with the modes of nature, for instance, time immemorial. So that kama is very powerful, because the love of Krishna is so powerful, so the reverse is also very powerful. And the whole process of devotional service is meant to sublimate it. It's a very good word for us, sublimate. It's exactly there from psychology. They may have a little different meaning, but I think that's the basic meaning. Is sublimate this kama back into prema by the scientific process of devotional service. And this, then just to deal a little bit with this riddhiya grunti, which comes up in this, you know, how can we untie or cut those knots? It comes up right in chapter 2. Yadanu nyasina yukta karma grunti nabandhanam chindanti kovidasa koyakurindakadin. There he calls it the karma grunti. It's the same idea, the knots in the heart. That by the sword of remembrance of Krishna. Krishna is all attractive. He can draw our consciousness. He can actually purify our hearts of these things. But we have to have the discipline to control the mind. Right here he says, I can't control my mind. Well, somehow or other, we have to do what's necessary to fix the mind on Krishna. And the most efficacious process is chanting the holy name and all the other practices that really support the chanting. And help us to remember Krishna and fix our mind on Krishna. Then it becomes possible that even in family life, you know, that one can remain detached to some degree. And be, you know, if you're fully engaged in devotional service. But it has to be a time limit. In the Kabbalah, there's a time limit there. Where at a certain point, then the separation comes and you really have to totally fix. And if possible, to give it up altogether. So that's the basic point here. Very graphic verse, punksastriyamadumini bhavametang. And we can all see how this is really how it works. You know, that this is really how this attachment grows. And we have to combat that through the strength that comes from hearing Bhagavatam, serving the Srimad Bhagavatam and the Bhagavat, chanting the holy names and so forth. So, I'd like to have a little question, but I wanted to say a few words about Baladev Vidyabhushan. Should I do that first? Okay. So, Baladev Vidyabhushan is very important in our line. He began, actually, I have this little vignette here from Mandini Maharaj's books. Let's see, where is it? Oh, here. And he was trained in the Madhva line. Actually, at first, he was very, very brilliant. Vidya Bhushan means he has the ornament of knowledge. That's what, you know, he has that. He's very learned. And from birth, or from childhood, he studied logic, he studied Sanskrit. And he took initiation in, he studied the commentaries of Shankara, actually, in Manva, and took initiation in the Tattvavadis. You know about the Tattvavadis from reading the Chaitanya Charitamrita, the followers of Madhya. But in Puri, he went to Jagannath Puri. Now his years, latter part of the 17th century, I think, with Vishwanath. He was his he became a Shiksha disciple of Vishwanath Chakravarti, very closely aligned with him. So he went to Puri and he heard about Lord Chaitanya, from about Lord Chaitanya's philosophy, and from Radha Damodara Goswami, who was a prominent scholar at that time, and took initiation after converting to Gaudiya Vaishnavism. And in Vrindavan, he studied the Bhagavatam under Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Now, he's most famous, of course, he wrote a commentary for the Bhagavad Gita, and Prabhupada, if you look at the dedication, he dedicates the book to Baladev Vidyabhushan, because he wrote a prominent commentary there, and Vishwanath also wrote a similar commentary, naturally. And that forms a lot of the, you know, when you read those extensive quotes of Sanskrit, you know, that's all coming from Baladev in his commentary in the Bhagavad Gita, bringing in the Upanishads and everything. Prabhupada's following very closely. And then came this, and then the second thing he's most famous for is writing the Govinda Bhashya, with the commentary for the Vedanta Sutra. And that came about because in, Jaipur, the Mahants there were saying that the Gaudiya Vaishnavas have no right to worship Govinda. Remember, Govinda had moved there to protect from the Muslims, because they don't have a commentary for the Vedanta Sutra. They were challenging. Because generally every Sampradaya has, you know. Lord Chaitanya said, we don't need it. We have the Bhagavatam. So he never wrote one, and no one else did until this time. It was a couple hundred years later. So what happened is he goes there. Let's see. And he prayed. He was Vishwanath would have done it, but he was too old. And so he asked Baladev, you do it. And you go there and you defend the Sampradaya. A very serious thing, you know. And so he went there and he prayed for, 3 days in the to Govinda. And he got the garland came down and he got the inspiration. He said, okay, you can write it. And so he called it Govinda Bhashya. He felt that Govinda was writing this Bhashya. So this is the Gaudiya Vaishnav, the only Gaudiya Vaishnav commentary for Vedanta Sutra. And it's available if you really want it. You can find it. So he's a very great scholar and very important in our line. And then finally, there's Ganga Mata Goswamini, who's got a pretty amazing story. I don't know if you've read her story. Let's see if I find it. She was born, lost my place, here she is, as, let's see, from childhood. She was known as Shachi Devi, and she doesn't give a year here, probably about the same time as Baladev. She was a daughter of a king, she was a princess. But she, from birth, she showed unalloyed devotion for Krishna, and she refused to marry. She became the queen. She was the queen of the kingdom in Bengal after her father's demise. But she soon renounced it to find a bona fide spiritual master. She just gave up the kingdom. She went to Vrindavan and she learned from Haridas Pandit, who was a leading guru at the time, and began performing devout bhajan of Lord Govinda. She became frail from under-eating. She would fast all the time. Would always sleep on the Yamuna's sandy bank. Remember, she's a princess and a queen. She gave all that up. Rise before sunrise, go to Govinda's temple. She would hear Bhagavad Katha, do arti, so forth, circumambulate, parakram. And she received encouragement from Haridas Pandit. And she completely dropped her false ego. She put on rags and went house to house begging, this princess. The Brijbasis were amazed at her severe renunciation. She went to Radhakund to associate with Lakshmi Priya Devi Dasi, a dear disciple of Haridas. So there's these two, you know, lady renunciants in Radhakund, you can imagine. She started chanting 300,000 names a day, just like Haridas Thakur, and circumambling Govardhan Hill. Then she went to Sarvabhauma's house in Jagannath Puri, and let's see. Lord Gauranga's eternal associates had already departed, gone to Goloka. So she restored Govinda's Sarvabhauma's house and established first-class worship of the Shama Sundar deity there. She would start lecturing now on Bhagavatam. Her classes became popular, attracting eager listeners from miles away. So then it describes, you know, how she got the name Ganga Mata. And this is the most amazing thing, because she was known as Shachi Devi. On the day of the Ganga Sagara Mela, she was residing in Puri, and she wanted to bathe in the Ganges. Well, the Ganges doesn't go to Jagannath Puri, right? That's Navadvip. So she wanted to bathe in the Ganges. So that night, the Ganges flowed from the lotus feet of Jagannath and came to Shachi's ashram. Entering into the Ganga Devi's waters, Shachi Devi was floated. She floated all the way to the lotus feet of Jagannath in the temple. After unlocking the doors the next morning, the pujaris were surprised to find her inside the temple. Thinking she was a thief, they immediately put her in jail. But seeing this mistake, Jagannath himself appeared simultaneously in a dream to both the king of Puri and the head pujari. The Lord ordered them to release Shachi and take initiation from her. From then on, she was known as Gangamata Goswamini. Very inspiring story. So any Gangamata Goswamini ki jai, any questions or comments on our little talk on that verse? Punksas tuyamitani bhava metam. Yes, yes. Go ahead.
Gita too.
Yes, I did mention that.
And also when Govindaji was taken off the altar in Jaipur, Radha and Krishna were separated.
Right.
And when they came, when they called for Vaishnava to come and settle this debate that was going on, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, as you mentioned, was called, but too elderly. But he laughed, and he said, at the idea that Radha and Krishna were separated, and he said, Radha has left in a huff. He saw that there was some internal...
I think, if I'm not mistaken, that was part of the thing that they were objecting to, is that they're not married, and so they can't really worship them. They were worshiping Lakshmi Narayan.
Lakshmi Narayan.
Right? Yeah. So this, you know, writing was very important of this commentary Baladeva established. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.